It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to start off with a sad reality. Sad reality. This country is not a serious country. The citizens of this country, about an inch deep, I'm afraid. So shallow, you wouldn't get your ankles wet in a puddle. I mean, we're in this weird kind of moment. Today I wake up to, and this is why I go here, I wake up to the foreign health minister for Trinidad and Tobago saying that they've done studies that the vaccine does not cause your testicles to swell. And I'm going, where's this coming from? And very quickly I find out. Evidently, Nicki Minaj, who I did not know, I don't know much about her. I guess my kids do. At first I thought Nicki Minaj's testicles are swollen. And I'm going, but that doesn't make a lot of sense because I'm just piecing this kind of together. And thanks to Tucker Carlson explained to me, thankfully, that it wasn't Nicki Minaj's testicles. It was possibly the cousin's testicles who's still in Tobago or Trinidad. And then I find out, no, that's all wrong too. It's the cousin's friend's testicles that are swollen that she believes somehow caused by the vaccine. And, you know, I'm reading through this, and it was trending all day on Twitter. I stand with Nicki Minaj. And I go, the only person who should be standing with Nicki Minaj is the cousin's friend with the swollen testicles, because it's painful to sit. So I'm going through this, and I'm really kind of going, we are so screwed as a society. When someone who, you know, I tried listening to some of the music, not my cup of tea, not at all. But people tell me she's good at it. Maybe she should stick to that, because Dr. Minaj, she is not. But Dr. Minaj tweeted out, my cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding. So just pray on it. I am not quite sure what she's praying on. And make sure you're comfortable with your decision, not bullied. I'm sorry. When did we start taking medical advice from someone I don't even really know? And then this isn't even like a really one of those anecdotes. It's kind of one of the... This is one of those things you hear Republicans throwing out. I know somebody who knows somebody who's related to somebody who they've got swollen testicles. So here's the thinking going on between whatever's in between her ears. Guy had swollen testicles, got the vaccine a week ago. Swollen testicles equals vaccine. Oh my gosh, don't do it. And I'm going, you know, could it be, just kind of throwing this out here, maybe the guy had a bachelor party, they had some friends over, got himself, some kind of sexually transmitted infection that caused said testicles to swell. That is a much more sane, rational, thoughtful explanation than, oh my gosh, he got the vaccine in giant balls. I mean, I'm struggling here, and I'm struggling for us to be a serious society. Because here's the thing. Nobody should know about this friend's balls anyway. Nobody. This should not be news. This should not be news. And I know this. It sounds, when you lay it out, you know, it's kind of weird that we're talking about somebody's stones in a country that most people can't even find on a freaking map. And yet, somebody, I know lug nuts out there going, Dr. Minaj said never get the shot because the boys are swollen. You know this is coming, man. And yet here we are, not a serious, thoughtful society on any level. When you're taking medical advice from a pop singer, what in the flying, flipping, you know what, are you possibly on? And all of the news media that all they want is the clickbait. Dr. Minaj, swollen balls. What kind of balls? Are we talking basketballs? Beach balls? What are we talking here? And now I got to see a picture. Because I knew a guy years ago had a blocked duct, a very real medical condition. He literally had what looked like a grapefruit. I mean, it was giant. And he was in the bar showing everybody. Which today would be sexual harassment, and I do not believe the friend of the cousin who has the giant swollen ball should be showing that to anyone because, well, Dr. Minaj would probably be beating up on him then. I mean, we used to be a serious country. We used to have serious journalists. Now we've got Tucker Carlson. And thank you, Tucker. Again, I appreciate the long explanation about the friend's ball. If it weren't for Fox News, I would have never gotten Dr. Minaj's giant friend's ball at all straight. It was because of the guy with the bow tie that I now know that the ball is swollen. And here's the thing. We get the media we deserve. This is what we want. We want National Enquirer TV. We want salacious nonsense. We want clickbait. We want to know about the guy in Trinidad with the giant ball. We need to know. Inquiring minds need to know. Because you know what? Lugnut, you know, doing his research with the ivermectin. Yeah, he might have a cure for it. Instead of going to the medical professionals who they spend their lives doing this stuff, we're going to a pop singer. And there are people protesting. Standing with Dr. Minaj. My head about to explode. Maybe. And then what my wife could say when my head explodes, he got the vaccine, caused the headache to explode. And some moron in the news media would go, radio host dies from swollen head due to vaccine. And people would click on it. Because that's how not serious we are. And again, I go, we could be a great society. We could be the exceptional society that we keep telling ourselves that we are. Except for every appearance from the outside says, no, we're basically just children. We're two-year-olds kicking and screaming in the cereal aisle. And don't understand or don't know how to filter out nonsense. Like Nikki and the giant ball. There's something seriously wrong. There is something seriously wrong with what is satire being taken as real news. We used to have The Onion. Remember The Onion? We used to love The Onion because it was mocking things. Now The Onion seems like serious journalism. The Onion would have never picked up Nikki and the Giant Ball story. Would have never happened. Never in a million years would that have happened. Never. Because it's even too crazy for them. But yet, one of the stories that was banging around is one written by a site that says they are a satire site. Self-described source for real fake local commentary and news and opinion. And yet people were sending it around. Look what Joe Biden's doing. Joe Biden's taking benefits from veterans because they won't get vaccinated. And I'm assuming you're going to put the giant ball story in there somehow to get more clicks because Dr. Minaj says don't, so Dr. Minaj should pay. It's crazy where we are. When The Onion and the Borowitz Report are no longer funny? Because when you put them up against what passes for journalism today, they don't look crazy? when Fox News, supposedly the authority, the fair and balanced, when I got to go to them to find out about the giant ball? I'm struggling here. Especially because, and really seriously, there is real news out there to be had. There are important stories that need to be told. For instance, in 1 week in September, from the 2nd to the 9th, almost 500,000 children have been diagnosed with COVID. 500,000. Because, hey, we went back to school. But you know that got almost no coverage? Because all the oxygen was taken out by the giant bouncing ball. And this is my problem with the kind of ridiculous nonsense that we get. How is it possible that our news media gave a flipping blank about Nicki Minaj? And why is that news? Why is it that we see this kind of both sides-ism that has gripped our news media? When Cooter in Florida is mad about the vaccine and now he's citing research by Nicki Minaj, who said she didn't do any research, to prove why he's got, you know, a metal spoon stuck to his testicles. And it turns out they're bluer than they were before. And he said, that's because of the vaccine. When the reality is, Cooter hasn't showered in a month. And anything will stick to his testicles. And the reason they're blue is because Peggy Sue wants nothing to do with them. Because he hasn't washed in a month. Not rocket science, Cooter. But going to cite the other one as the reality. And yet, we're no closer to solving our problems. And maybe we need the distraction. Maybe we need some gallows humor. We're all gonna die anyway, so we're gonna be a something that might as well be of giant swollen testicles. I mean, when can we become a serious society that I kind of remember? You know, I think of that Jeff Daniels bit that he did on that HBO show. I think it was called The Network, where, you know, someone asked him, you know, is America the greatest country in the world? And why do you think America is the greatest country in the world? And you had the conservative and the liberal say stupid stuff. And Jeff Daniels just went off on both of them. You know, saying, you know, we're not the freest country in the world. We're not the best country in the world. We've got idiot people who believe in nonsensical, ridiculous things. But we should be. We once were. We aspired to intelligence. We aspired to be better. We believed people of intelligence. We didn't belittle it. We didn't ridicule smart people. We didn't want to demonize them. We wanted to take the information that they had and learn from it instead of figuring out ways to attack it. It's amazing to me. And I talk to conservatives all the time who now cereal box epidemiologists who are going to tell me why Dr. Fauci's wrong. Fauci, and they come up with 1,000 conspiracy theories. All built out of, I believe. And somehow, you know, doing their Nicki Minaj kind of research, none at all. They've come up with a theory, a conspiracy. And what does that mean for the rest of us? It means we all suffer. It means we get worse. As a society, it becomes ridiculous. If you've ever seen the movie Idiocracy, it's where we are moving. And I would even argue, too late. We have found our home. When the story trending all day is about some guy's stones in Trinidad, and that's getting the White House involved, when the White House is reaching out to her and saying, hey, we'll get you some doctors, because this person has the kind of platform and the kind of oversized voice with a segment of our population that's not protecting themselves. When the White House is sending representatives to go, hey, we'll help you do some research since you're too lazy to do it yourself, and not doing it, we got problems. But the biggest problem of all is the fact that anyone would look to Dr. Minaj for any advice whatsoever. any at all. And here's the thing. While that sucked up all the air in the room, President Biden gave a 23-minute speech today about how he hopes to raise taxes and hopes to make the wealthy pay their fair share and give the working people of this country a fair shot. And you know what our news media was doing? They were mocking the man because he had a cough. The substance be damned. This is what they do. These are the distractions. Demand better media. Demand people who tell better stories. Not stuff that's going to tear us apart. You remember when the soldiers came back from Afghanistan in Delaware? When the bodies of our heroes came back? All our news media could focus on is for a brief second Joe Biden looked at his watch. Not while they were taking the bodies off the plane, but while he was just there. That's what they focused on. They focused on what tears us apart, what distracts us, what puts us into different camps so we can be pitted against one another and forced to fight each other in some kind of weird Hunger Game mentality. Remember just a couple bit ago when the people were getting out of Afghanistan? It was all about the dogs. Remember the dogs? Oh, the poor dogs. Anybody talking about the dogs now? No, because our news media is all about division. It's all about getting as much people as riled up and as bunched up in the panties and as lathered up as possible. So they'll click and they'll click and they'll click and they'll click because that means money. Money for them. The stories don't matter. The truth doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. What matters is feeding your confirmation bias. What matters is the most salacious story possible. So when the golden calf comes or the golden ball comes along, they can't resist. They can't resist because for them, it's the golden nugget, man. And in a couple of weeks, months, maybe we'll really find out that the reality was he went to a bachelor party and caught something, which would seem to be the more rational of thoughts other than, oh my gosh, he got the vaccine. And then, oh my gosh, it was giant. It's crazy. It's a crazy world we live in. But ask yourself, for your part in it, why are we listening to Nicki Minaj? How is it possible anybody gives a flying flip about what she thinks? Sing the songs. Do your gig. You're not a doctor. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. More American than workers standing up. Union gives a voice to win on The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day oil workers walked off the job. The strike soon spread to 20 states and involved more than 43,000 workers at 22 oil companies. After years of wartime wage freezes, the union's demand was 52 for 40, 52 hours pay for 40 hours work. Workers demanded a 30% pay increase, shift differentials, and an eventual return to the 36-hour work week. The strike began in Michigan at the Saucony Vacuum Refinery in Trenton. From there, it spread to Gulf, Sinclair, and Shell. By October 4th, President Truman signed Executive Order 9639, allowing the Secretary of the Navy to seize petroleum operations. The Oil Workers International Union CIO immediately called off the strike and ordered its members back to work. A month later, the Navy had still not relinquished control of operations. The union considered Truman's seizure a betrayal. There was no mechanism put in place to settle the dispute or consider workers' demands. By January 1946, the oil panel created by the Secretary of Labor finally awarded oil workers an 18% wage increase. Though disappointed, the union considered it a victory. They asserted the strike action was significant on a number of levels. The first nationwide industry strike had just forced the oil companies to meet with the union for the very first time. The OWI believed the groundwork for industry-wide bargaining had been finally established. It had been the first post-war strike and had forced the government to begin moving away from wartime wage controls. Of the post-war strikes, it won the largest pay increase. And importantly, it broke the power of Standard Oil to dictate wages to the industry through its dealings with its independent union.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, get ready for the weekend. Yep, we got some fun coming up on Saturday, September 18th. In fact, so much fun that the Department of Homeland Security, our folks in D.C., they have issued a warning for all law enforcement people in the area. They're saying that a small number of recent online threats of violence have occurred. They're saying it's connected to the Justice for J6 rally, and be on the lookout. There are a number of online discussions encouraging violence on the day before the rally as well. So Friday and Saturday, they're expecting some violence. Capitol Police and the D.C. Metro Police Departments, they've added additional cops to come on. They've got the National Guard. Anyone in the local area who has civil disturbance unit training will be on duty. We also know that earlier in the month there was a report that they're going to kidnap a member of Congress. So, hey, fun. Fun times coming. And here to share some thoughts on the fun and the entertainment of the justice for the J6 people, I've asked our good friend Jared Yates Sexton to come talk with us. Jared's an author, political analyst, and host of the Muckrake podcast. His book, you make sure you want to get this, American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. Jared, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at justice for J6. What in the are we talking about here? These are criminals. I want justice for them too. I want them behind bars.
You know, criminals, political prisoners, potato, potato. Am I right, Rick? I mean, you know, what kind of a country are we living in when people can overrun the capital of the United States of America, try and overturn a presidential election, and try and kill the vice president of their own party? I mean, are we really going to hold these people responsible? Is that the America that we all know and love?
You know, but here's the thing. I'm in this weird spot because I've kind of come around on the COVID front to the people who are unvaccinated, maybe not beating up on them as much as I would want to viscerally and as much as I would, because some doctors have said, look, I understand these people were dupes. I understand they're not smart enough to understand what's going on, that they listen to people who were in positions of power and of respect who have abused that power. I look at these idiots who were on there on January 6th, who have been sold this bill of goods that somehow they are patriots. And I want to believe that they're just stupid and fell into this. But look, I know some of them. They went there knowing exactly what they were doing. And I want maximum sentences for every one of them.
Listen, I know and love a lot of people who are involved in all of this stuff, like people I grew up with, people in my family, people in my communities, people who refuse to take vaccines. They traffic in conspiracy theories. I know people who they weren't there on January 6th, but they wish that they could have been. And I have to tell you that anybody who went into that building, whether it was a relative, a loved one, or somebody that I grew up with, they deserve to be punished underneath the law. I mean, that we cannot have a country like this. We can't have this situation where people start popping off on an internet forum, and the next thing you know, we have to put up gates and cages and pretend like this is anything nearing normal. We have to do something about
this.
Yeah,
and the thing is, Jared, is we've got a former president who his statement was, our hearts and minds are with the people being persecuted so unfairly.
Oh man, that's so gross.
Let that sink in. I mean, let that sink in a second. Just take that in. A former president, who his number two was, they wanted to hang, which he probably wants to hang too. But he hearts and minds with him.
You know, I watched January 6th, and it was the accumulation of a lot of things that I was warning about. I was trying to tell people that these people were going to try and overturn a presidential election. I mean, it was an attempted coup. And the only thing that's actually more upsetting than that is to watch in the aftermath this entire sort of framing of political prisoners. I mean, this is 1930s Germany is what it is. It's talking about people who want to overturn a government violently through violent revolution. corruption and through subversion. And now we're talking about that they're political prisoners, that they need justice. I mean, this is a really troubling situation that's developing.
No, I mean, you know, I look at our society, and you know, today I started the show off, you know, talking about, you know, what I came across with Dr. Nicki Minaj and her vaccine advice, and her the extensive research that she didn't do, but she doesn't want anybody being bullied. Heaven forbid, but she knows there are giant balls out there somewhere. I look at this and I'm going, why is this a story? Because it's a distraction. It's the thing that's made to keep us from focusing on what's really important and what's really going on, which is we, the working class of this country, have been screwed for decades. And the powerful elite, they don't believe in democracy and they don't want us to have democracy.
Yeah, and you know what's weird about that is we're talking about the absolute ridiculous ramblings of a multimillionaire. And meanwhile, you know what's not being talked about? The fact that our mainstream publications today, and I'm sure you saw this, Rick, they're talking about how wonderful it is that Amazon is getting ready to construct company towns. And we just can't wait to get back to company towns where, you know, everybody's life is completely taken over by a corporation that determines not just how much they're paid, but what resources they get and basically every facet of their lives. You're exactly right. We are a country that is addicted to and completely and utterly distracted by all of these giant, weird, bizarre stories that have nothing to do with our actual lives. And meanwhile, the plundering and exploitation just continues and it grows by every single day.
And the question that I keep coming back to is how do we get back from this? Because I do remember, you know, maybe just vaguely a time where we had serious journalism. We had serious people. We as a society listened to smart people, respected intelligence, not belittled it. I don't know if it's possible to go back to that place.
You know, in this current moment, and you know, I appreciate people like you. I appreciate people who talk about serious things. And meanwhile, mainstream media chases things like Nicki Minaj and the story about cousins and friends in Trinidad. What actually is happening in this country is that I think a large group of people, I think there is a movement towards sensibility. I think there are people realizing that they're being exploited and that things are turning in a way that is destructive and inhumane and exploitive. I actually think that there's a groundswell towards that.
I hope so.
All of this distraction, all of this garbage, all of this nonsense that we're talking about right now, I think it's a lot of people who are very, very desperate to change the conversation, and the fact that even the next generation and growing numbers of people realize that this system and this status quo has to change.
No, you're right. And I hope you're right. I hope this is actually happening because, you know, I was talking about this earlier today with a friend. I go, you know, the sad reality is the giant, you know, Nicki and the giant ball story got so much airtime. And yet you've got workers striking in five different states at Nabisco trying to get better wages, hours, conditions, a bit of personal respect and dignity and some family life work balance and things that would actually make people's lives better. Zero on the media frame. I couldn't find a story anywhere today on it. And this is the kind of stuff that frustrates and angers me.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of people that I love and I care about, I know tons of people right now who are having to work everywhere from 60 to 80 hours.
Yep.
Mandatory right now. We're talking about factories, we're talking about industry, we're talking about all these corporations that refuse to hire anybody, they refuse to pay their people what they deserve. Any even sniff of organization leads to these factories and businesses either going over the border or just being shut down altogether. But I do feel like we are watching the beginnings, the birth pangs, if you will, of something that might be a revival of whether or not it's unionism, solidarity, or some sort of a revolt against this absolutely exploitive regime. I do have hope right now, but I will say that it is really, really dark and foreboding at the moment.
But isn't that the argument, you know, just what you've laid out, isn't that the argument that the right tells their people that your life sucks? And not, you know, not where I think we would go, that, you know, we've got these corporate elites who do everything they can do to crush organizing and hold wages down and make working conditions horrible and all of the things that we see. they've created an alternative universe, that it's not the billionaires, it's not the CEOs, that it's those poor people coming from other places, that it's the others, it's them that's making your life miserable, and it's you didn't live up to the expectations that we sold you as kids. And they, in the same vein, think that they're rising up and organizing to take us to some utopian place. Or am I missing something?
No, you're dead on. I mean, what the right has done, and this has gone on for centuries, but there are movements against this. There are times where people start to realize what's up. And this is one of those moments. I actually do believe that. I think that Trump was able to tap into that in part. And I think Fox News has been able to basically blame all of this on the New World Order, the deep state, and currently they're in the QAnon universe. But at the end of the day, you can be mad about Mr. or Mrs. Potato Head. You can be mad about Dr. Seuss. But by the time you go home, you have still completed a 75 to 80 hour work week. And the next thing you know, you look around, you're like, this isn't about immigrants. This isn't about people of color. This isn't about the New World Order. This is about us versus them. This is about the working class versus the exploitive class. And I think that's what we're talking about here is a lot of people who have hidden behind these conspiracy theories and all this fear-mongering and white supremacy. I think they're starting to look up on this. And I think they're starting to actually think it over, which is the inevitability when you hide behind these.
Yeah, so you seem to think we're going to see an old school kind of moment where we have to decide which side we're on. Because look, I know a lot of working people who think they're going to be the next Jeff Bezos. I think Steinbeck called them embarrassed millionaires. I'm looking at that going, you know, which side are you on? And that's a question that I've been asked for decades. And when I was a kid in high school, when we were talking about which political party we would be part of, it was a which side are you on? Are you on the side of the wealthy or on the side of the working class? And those things are very apparent to me.
You know, Rick, when I'm not moonlighting as a leftist subversive, I'm spending my time inside the classroom and as a professor. And I have to tell you, the next generation, they know what's going on. They know what's happening. They have no idea that they're going to end up with the 3 or 4 bedroom home with a 2-car garage. I mean, the illusion of the meritocracy and anything even resembling a humane economy, they know that that is straight up garbage. So I do think that reinforcements are coming. I think the cavalry is just over the ridge. It's going to be a matter of how we fight and what we look for at this point.
We'll eventually get there. I just may not be there with you. Is what you're telling me.
You know what, Rick? We will remember you fondly, is what we'll do.
No, because look, I'm hoping it's sooner as opposed to later, because I've said this before. I don't want my kids to have to fight the same battles that their grandparents had to fight. I mean, you go back to to the Great Depression era. My grandparents' generation, they came back, fought World War II. They came back and fought in the workplace to build the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. And we've basically given it back away. And they're unfortunately going to have to fight those same battles, because I'm privileged in the fact that, like you in classrooms, I get to get out and talk to workers in the streets. And they tell the stories of horrible working conditions, extraordinarily long hours, poverty wages in some cases, and healthcare costs that are literally killing them. And yet they're afraid to organize. They're always looking over their shoulder. The boss's presence is always there. And I'm looking to the next generation going, I hope you've got the courage and the passion to move forward where these folks haven't.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a home of FDR Democrats. I grew up around people who believe that the Democratic Party was supposed to be the party of the working person. And I watched that get savaged in the 1980s into the 1990s.
Yep.
And you know, there are ups and downs with these things, but I think that the foundation is there. I think that the working class people of the United States of America, they recognize what is happening. They simply need someone to speak to them. They need some sort of a movement that will coalesce and lead to solidarity and organization. I think it's coming. Right now, this moment is very frustrating and very dangerous, is what I will say, because those illusions that were sown by people like Ronald Reagan and the people who basically, you know, manipulated him like puppet masters, I think we're still living in that reality, but it feels like we're getting ready to wake up from that illusion.
Yeah, and talking about the danger, I'm looking at this weekend's Justice for J6 rally. And like I said, the Department of Homeland Security, they're preparing. I'm hoping there are going to be six National Guard people for every MAGA hat wearing moron who shows up, claiming they love the country while ready to stab somebody with the American flag. And I'm looking at this going, I think back to Jay Gould, the railroad magnate of the 1880s, who said I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. And I'm looking at them going, that's it in action right there.
No, that's exactly what's been going on this entire time. The wealthy and the powerful in this country understand that their only means of survival and maintaining power is to manipulate people and to keep them living in this alternate reality that you had already mentioned. This world where they're not the ones exploiting. It's the people of color over here. It's the immigrants over there. It's your neighbor. It's the people that you're supposed to trust. But that's a very, very thin veneer. You know what I mean? Like it has no truth behind it. It has no actual substance to it. And the moment that you actually speak truth to it, it starts to disintegrate. The question at this point is whether or not we can get beyond this moment of crisis with MAGA and QAnon and all of these conspiracy theories, because they are very fragile and brittle. The question is, how do we get beyond it? And I think we will. I truly do.
I hope, but ultimately it comes back to us and us having some kind of rational filters where we, to be honest, I looked at the Nicki Minaj story at first today and I just blew it right off. I didn't even, it wasn't until I saw it seven or eight times, I'm going, what the heck is this about, that I actually spent 10 minutes looking into it and then going, this is insane. It's just crazy. Last question I got for you, the big justice for J6, which is just ridiculous. The big rally this weekend, what kind of crowd do you think we're expecting? If you looked at last week, they had that big, supposedly going to be a 10,000 person rally with the MyPillow guy. They got like 250. Are we expecting a repeat?
I love that any conversation about this has to involve a pillow magnate who is a former crack addict. So in this entire situation, the question, and January 6th was the real pinnacle of this. The question is, how many extremists, how many white supremacists, how many domestic terrorists are going to be there, and how many people can be pushed into creating violent action? I haven't seen anything from my research and my observance of these groups, and I keep a pretty close eye on them. It doesn't seem like this thing is going to rise to that level, but right. I mean, listen, we are living in crazy times.
Yeah, we most certainly are. But Jared, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great talking with you, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Good stuff, Jared Yates Sexton. Make sure you pick up his book, American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2004. That was not a good day for hockey fans. The National Hockey League owners locked out the players. The owners and the players' union could not come to an agreement on issues including pay, free agency rules, and drug testing. League owners also wanted to implement a salary cap. The Players Association objected. The first game of the season was supposed to take place on October 13th. But across the country, the arenas stood silent. As the impasse dragged on, in February, the league announced the season was canceled. The Associated Press reported, quote, "A hockey season on the brink is now a season gone bust." The NHL canceled what was left of its decimated schedule Wednesday after a round of last gasp negotiations failed to resolve differences over a salary cap, the flashpoint issue that led to a lockout. The article continued, quote, "No Stanley Cup champion will be crowned. The first time that's happened since 1919, when the two-year-old league called off the finals because of a flu epidemic. It was the first time that a North American professional sports league lost a full season to a labor dispute. Some of the players found work in the European leagues at greatly reduced pay. It's estimated that the league lost $2 billion in the lockout and that players lost $1 billion in salaries. The impact of the lockout rippled throughout restaurants and other businesses that relied on the hockey crowds, causing layoffs for waitstaff. Finally, in July, an agreement was reached. The players gave in to the owner's demand for a salary cap. In 2012, another lockout by management cost NHL players another half of the season. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So President Biden gave a 23-minute speech today talking about his hopes to be able to raise taxes on the very wealthy in the country. Says, hey, look, he's not doesn't want to punish anybody, doesn't want to punish, but, you know, there are some folks who should be paying their fair share. And he said, you know, he's not pushing a new deal. I wasn't expecting that. But he is wanting to provide a fair shot for the middle class. And that means, well, we need investments and we need it now. And here to share some thoughts on should we be taxing the wealthy? Should we follow Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's dress, which I thought was fabulous, by the way. I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, also the author of Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good to talk to you, Rick, anytime.
So I'm looking at the president's speech, and the first story I saw on it in our ridiculous media is Joe Biden was coughing.
Well, a lot of people are coughing. I cough too sometimes. I wasn't paying attention to the coughs. I was paying attention to the words. And the words are that he needs the rest of the Democrats who were elected the same time he was, voted into office by the same people who voted him in, have to come along and join the rest of the party and get with the program and tax the rich. That's what the voters want. That's what AOC wants. When she walked in with that dress just 100 yards over there at the Metropolitan Costume Institute Gala. And that's what we need to do. We need to decrease inequality in our nation. We don't want to live in a nation with a few rich people who don't pay any taxes and lots of poor people. We need people like me who get investment income to be charged the same tax rates as all of your listeners out there who get taxes deducted from their paycheck every single week. That's what we need.
No, we absolutely do need it. But, you know, the president did ask, how is it possible that the wealthiest billionaires in the country can entirely escape paying income taxes on what they make? And it's a question that I've asked and we've talked about numerous times. It's our tax code. It's how they've lobbied to make sure that their income is excluded in that. And this is a moment, I think, that, you know, as a country, we can maybe right some of the wrongs of the past, well, at least couple of tax bills anyway.
Yes. We can make the reason is pretty obvious. I wasn't surprised when that ProPublica piece came out that you like weren't paying much taxes. I see numbers on my computer screen and I get richer in sort of casual conversation. I can say, oh, I'm making money. I made hundreds of thousands of dollars, but that doesn't mean I made taxable income. I decide for myself if I want to realize gains and have taxable income. Otherwise, I can just withdraw money from my brokerage account whenever I feel like it. And go on like that for a long time and not have any taxable income, because we only charge taxes, income tax on taxable income, not on making money writ large. And that's what billionaires do.
Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of other schemes and how people get around it. And this is where, honestly, at some point, we've got to claw some of that back. But here again, you go back to the Bush era, the George W. Bush era. One of the things that they did with the IRS was get rid of a bunch of IRS attorneys who were going after and auditing tax returns like yours and others, because they're complicated. They're big, they're long, and you've got the resources to be able to fight them. So they did away with them. They moved them to going after working people. And it's been that way since the Bush era till now. Biden's simply saying, hey, we need some money to undo that damage. That doesn't seem all that onerous to me.
No, that's one of the few things we can get Republicans and Democrats to agree on, is that we need to enforce the laws. We need a law enforcement agency to enforce the laws about taxes and collect the money that's due.
Do Republicans actually believe in that, though? Do you think Republicans actually believe in that? Because most of my Republican friends want to abolish the IRS. They don't want anybody paying taxes. So I'm not sure that you're going to get them to agree to enforcing the tax laws that they despise.
Well, you're probably right. I take that back. At least you can get all the Democrats to agree on that, maybe. But I think that that's not enough, though, because that does not address the issues of investors like me and Mr. Bezos and Mr. Musk paying far lower tax rates than people who work for a living, because that is perfectly legal. The laws are written that way. These billionaires, they're not the criminals. And frankly, our patriotic millionaires are not the criminals either. There are criminals out there who cheat on their taxes, and we do need law enforcement to track them down and make them pay what they're supposed to be paying. But that's not the real problem that's causing inequality in our country. The real problem is the fact the laws are written and designed to increase inequality and to have rich people having lower tax rates than people who work for a living.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
the real problem.
The reality, Morris, is you don't need, billionaires don't need to be criminals because they run the system. When their money is what funnels, what fuels the system, you can write whatever you want into law. And this is one of those weird moments, because I had a friend years ago whose grandfather was a very wealthy guy during World War II. And they were, the story that he told me is that the grandfather was proud of the fact that they paid the top marginal tax rate. They didn't go and try and get out of paying the taxes. They paid it because it was their civic duty. We've kind of lost that, you know, 80s forward of greed is good and the one with the most toys when they die wins. That mentality has kind of gripped all of us.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Douglas wore shirts with the stripes going the wrong way and told everyone greed is good. And then Ronald Reagan came along and said that everyone's supposed to just be by themselves and not contribute to the common good and commonwealth. And then Donald Trump came along and bragged about cheating on taxes, essentially. And we've gone a long way. We have to go back the other way. Back to World War II, when they first raised taxes a lot. You'll see they had jingles and little music videos about how patriotic it is to pay taxes. You know, that's what we need. We need that. I don't know if we need music videos, but we need that feeling that paying taxes is patriotic. You know, they had famous actors going by the plane. Oh, I paid for this plane and so did Rockefeller. And that's what we need again. The idea that everyone is supposed to pay their fair share, and rich people have a much higher fair share than people who work for a living. That's what we need.
Yeah. Well, from what's the, how's the saying go? From what much is given, you know, much is expected, something along that lines.
Yes. And even the very rich people understand that a lot of it is because of the society where they built their businesses, because of those who came before them, because of all the things were provided for them. Very few people get rich just by doing nothing. Well, actually, Sam Walton's children did. They did absolutely nothing and became billionaires. But most people who are rich are part of society and do something and to take advantage of the society where they grew up in. And that's the fact. And that's why those of us who are have good fortunes should be required to pay more taxes than those people who don't have good fortunes and don't have any money.
Do I sense a bit of envy there? I mean, they won the birth lottery. You had to go and work for a living. A little envy there, maybe?
Well,
I'm just kidding. With you.
I don't really think about it too much.
No, but you're right. They won the birth lottery.
Look, Rick, I've been extremely lucky in my time. I've been in the right place at the right time a few times. I have kids who are doing great. I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. I really believe that.
And the thing that,
know,
I love about you,
I retired years ago. I spend my time talking to you.
No, the thing I love about you is the fact that you're willing to admit that. Look, I was in the right place at the right time. I've been very fortunate. And I now want to help other people to do that instead of going, hey, I climbed the ladder. I'm going to kick it off the wall.
Yeah, ask Warren Buffett. He talks about, you know, the ovarian birth lottery too. You know, the most best thing he ever did, he says, was being born in Omaha, Nebraska when he was. And that's true for most really rich people. They had a lot of things in their favor to begin with. You know, Mark Zuckerberg is a billionaire, and that's great. He should be a billionaire. He's a brilliant guy. But he also had parents who ran a very successful dental practice in the suburbs of New York who were able to pay him and his sister for years while they were trying to build Facebook into a business. So he didn't need to actually earn a living.
Right. No, and those are stories.
You know, not everyone has those advantages.
Right. Those stories are never told when the lore is passed down generation to generation, that they had the resources to begin with, that they weren't just tinkering in their garages. But, you know, I saw this story earlier today over at Bloomberg News, and this is one of the things that's most concerning to me. The tax code is one thing. And it's something that we have to address to get the wealth class of this country to pay a little bit more. But also for me on the wage front, you know, I think I talk about my grandparents all the time who came back from fighting World War II and fascism overseas to coming back to here and fighting to build the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. And yet now I'm seeing Amazon building company towns, and we've got a media structure going, oh, that's just going to be a great thing. It's going to lift the working class. It's going to be fantastic. As where I don't see them going, we should be paying them more. We should be giving them the ability to unionize, the fight for better wages, hours, and conditions so they can buy their own home.
Yeah, Henry Ford tried that in Brazil, in, you know, the last century too. Yeah, I mean, I think that part of the problem is the decline of unions, and that's because of the laws they passed, starting when Harry Truman was president, before I was born. They've had this anti-union movement in the United States, and that's part of what has driven wages and salaries down and profits for shareholders like me up. You know, yeah. I mean, part of the reason why I'm wealthy is because I own, you know, $1 million worth of stock in Amazon that was worth a fraction of that when I bought it. And that's nice, but I don't do anything compared with what all the people who put the stuff in the boxes and send it around do. And they need to earn a living too, because I want them to be able to buy stuff and shop and buy expensive shoes and expensive ice cream and all the things that help our patriotic millionaire members build businesses and get rich.
Right. Now, the president said today that, you know, his plan is going to lower costs for people to have daycare, child care, elder care. This whole Build Back Better plan is going to give people the opportunity to get health care coverage for seniors with vision and dental and hearing. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here that we've needed for decades. And yet we've got someone like Joe Manchin who's going, nope, can't afford it. And yet the Treasury Department came out this week and said, look, we know where there's about $600 billion a year, about $7 trillion over the next decade. We can certainly afford it.
We can afford it. We can afford it. The thing that people like Joe Manchin sometimes forget is the United States government actually prints money.
Yes.
And they remembered that in 2017 when they passed the last tax bill in the middle of the night with only Republican votes, that they didn't need to take in as much money as they send out because they create money, U.S. dollars. And I think Democrats have to remember that too. It's not like the number that was written by in pencil by a bunch of Republican staffers in the middle of the night was written by God on stone tablets. We can change the size of the budget irregardless of the amount of tax revenue the government has. But I also think that we do need to change the tax system too, because it's the way it's contributing to inequality. We need to shift things so that those of us who are uber wealthy and investors pay at least the same tax rates as all of your listeners, Rick, who work for a living.
Right. So policy-wise, how do you get there? Because like you said, most of your income is unrealized interest in capital gains that taxed at either, well, nothing if you haven't taken any money out yet. But when you do, it's at a much lower rate. How do we go and go after that?
Well, talk to Senator Wyden, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee from Oregon. He's got plans for unrealized capital gains to be taxed too. Like all the money you make is considered taxable income under some of his plans. We have plans to change the system so that people who make investment income pay the same tax rates as people who work for a living. They have plans so that if you inherit wealth and sell it, you still have to pay taxes based on how much profit was made from when it was bought by your parents or whomever, instead of only profit made, you know, after you inherited it. That's what they call the step-up basis loophole that's created billion-dollar fortunes for those of us who are very fortunate. So there are a lot of plans, particularly with Senator Wyden and the Senate Finance Committee.
Right.
But there are a lot of people pushing, and we are pushing them to improve this plan that the House Ways and Means came up with. We are talking to the recalcitrant Congress people now, and we are trying to push them to insist on these changes.
Now,
that's what the Patriotic Millionaires are doing.
No, and you guys are doing great work. I mean, you're doing fabulous stuff. The videos and stuff you're putting out are fantastic, and I hope people will take a look at them.
And we have the book. Tax the Rich.
Tax the Rich. That most certainly a book you got to look at, but also your website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Lots of information there, videos, things to get information. But, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, at some point, yeah, that's one part of it. The other part is we've got to organize workers to get better wages, hours, conditions. Is there more that can, should be done? And if there is, how do we get to that point, given our political realities?
Well, after we get this tax thing passed, we're going to work on the fair elections bill that Senator Joe Manchin is one of the sponsors of. And yes, they're going to have to decide to pass it with only Democratic votes and ignore the filibuster rules. And we're going to work on increasing wages, particularly increase the minimum wage. And we're going to work on the PRO Act, too, to give workers more rights to actually organize. There's no reason why employers should have rights to organize more than workers do. And so we need the PRO Act, too.
No, I absolutely agree with you. But in looking at this, one of the frames that keeps coming back at me is, well, we shouldn't be taxing people who are successful. This frame that the right has done masterfully is, you know, we're just punishing people who have done well, and it's all only going to benefit the lazy. Make an argument against that.
It's not punishing anybody. Somebody has to pay taxes. I mean, nobody claims that everyone should pay no taxes. And half of Americans don't make enough money to pay any taxes. So we have to tax those of us who have done well. We have to do it that way. We've always had a graduated tax system where people with higher incomes have higher tax rates than people with lower incomes. And we have to go back to the way it was when America was great.
Yeah.
You know,
the good socialist years of Dwight David Eisenhower.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Even the people who are complaining the most got rich paying tax rates at double the rates that they're paying now. And they're running around complaining, oh, we can't build America anymore. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So last question I've got for you. If we do all this, we do raise taxes on the very wealthy. Is it your argument that it would actually benefit the wealthy as well?
Yes. If we have less inequality in our country, if instead of having millions of people who losing their jobs and not paying their rent, if all those people are able to pay their rent and go out to eat at restaurants and buy shoes and ice cream and all the other things that people do with extra money, we're all going to be better off. My children and grandchildren are going to be building businesses the way my parents and grandparents did, and the whole country, it particularly including the investor class, is going to be better off. I'm telling you, investors are better off with a big, robust middle class, not with a country full of poor people.
I'm right there with you. Morris, I appreciate you taking time. Always great talking with you, my friend.
Anytime, Rick. Thank you.
Good stuff. Morris Pearl, he is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. At noon, a horse-drawn wagon containing 100 pounds of dynamite pulled up across the street from the J.P. Morgan Company on Wall Street in New York City. 500 pounds of cast iron slugs were packed in with the dynamite. A timer detonated at 12:01 p.m. The explosion destroyed the horse and wagon. Shrapnel from the explosion ripped through the air, killing 38 people and injuring hundreds more. The unknown driver of the wagon was believed to have escaped. Authorities blamed anarchists. Meanwhile, the company's workers who died in the attack were mostly young messengers, stenographers, clerks, and brokers. Most of the wounded suffered severe injuries. Just minutes after the blast, the president of the New York Stock Exchange suspended trading in order to prevent a panic. Since the target had been the J.P. Morgan Company, the New York State District Attorney suggested the bomb was planted by radical anti-capitalists. The Bureau of Investigation, the forerunner to the FBI, FBI pursued the bombing for 3 years. They never found the culprit. In 1944, the FBI reopened the investigation and decided the bomb was the work of Italian anarchists. There was speculation that the bomb was planted by an Italian in retaliation for the executions of Sacco and Vanzetti. 3 days after the bombing, the New York Times reported, "It was said today at the Department of Justice that Attorney General Palmer would recommend in his annual report to Congress that drastic laws for dealing with anarchists and other disturbing elements be enacted. At the same time, he will ask for larger appropriations, which were denied in the past." Over the next 2 years, the Palmer raids arrested and deported many accused leftists. Not surprising, most of the accused and deported were the loudest voices for workers' rights and a united working class. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.